Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic that we've survived for 45 years. The organisation itself was established back in July 1971. You know, for the first 15, 18 months, we were not funded. It was all staffed voluntary. People donated their time and money to come and do what they could. Doctors, when they'd finish in their surgeries of an afternoon, would then come and spend an hour or a couple of hours there. We had the likes of, you know, Naomi Mayers, Mum Shirl, Gary Foley, Gary Williams, our first Aboriginal president, and you know, and the list goes on. And of course, the medical service was hot on the heels of the Aboriginal legal service. That was established in 1970, and it gave Aboriginal people representation in courts, and again, that was staffed voluntary. The solicitors would turn up to courts and appear for Aboriginal clients. You know, before that, Aboriginal people used to just go there to court and plead guilty. So solicitors started coming in, volunteering their times, and would challenge the charges against them. And at that time in Redfern, there was a hospital just up the road from the legal service called the Rachel Foster Hospital that didn't like to see Aboriginal people. And I mean, it wasn't just the hospital in Redfern, but it was hospitals all over Australia. There's a number of hospitals that had separate wards for Aboriginal mothers that had their babies. A lot of them had babies on the verandas and all that. We just got sick of it. 1970s was the time for activism. You had the anti-Vietnam War. You had apartheid in South Africa. You had the civil rights in the US. And all those things, of course, television was new and they were beamed into the homes of a lot of people in Australia. The women's liberation movement was just beginning in Australia. But you know, we questioned, as Aboriginal people, we questioned as to why all these so-called white activists and socialists were getting in behind all these human rights movements outside of Australia when, in fact, Aboriginal people in Australia were being treated just as bad and just as harsh as they were in South Africa or in the deep south of the US or anywhere else in the world. We couldn't get to see a doctor in front of white people in Redfern at the time. So based on the history and the things that the legal service put forward, we thought, well, we could talk the legal fraternity into backing Aboriginal people, then why can't we get white doctors to back Aboriginal people to have their own AMSs, their own Aboriginal medical services. And at that stage, there were no Aboriginal doctors in Australia in 1971. There are now, I think, approximately 180, and within the next 3 years, there's going to be something like another 50 or 60 doctors, Aboriginal doctors will graduate. So it's been a long, hard journey. It's one that I've been involved with and been very proud to be involved with. We were the first ones to start that in Australia, or indeed the world. There are now something like 200 Aboriginal medical services throughout Australia. There are countries in overseas like Canada and the United States and India that are looking and have looked at the community control Aboriginal health services way of conducting business and have started doing it themselves. I think that's the other big plus in all this is that it's the local Aboriginal community that controls the service itself. We don't have somebody sitting in Canberra or sitting downtown in Sydney or you know, up in rural New South Wales or anywhere else that controls our service. It's been elected locally by the local community, and that's you know, our whole concept of local Aboriginal community control.
Yeah, you've mentioned there the racism that existed, the need for the medical service to be established because people weren't even getting to see a doctor. What about the closure of the Western Sydney Aboriginal Medical Service? What's going to happen to all those people that went there?
Yeah, well, those, you know, that service, and I must say the racism still exists today, just because Aboriginal medical services and legal services and other Aboriginal organisations have begun. It didn't stop the racism.
Yeah.
Racism today is just as fierce and just as endemic as it was back in the 70s. And it was one of the reasons why the medical service and legal services were established. It was to fight that racism. See, the Aboriginal Medical Service in Redfern probably helped communities establish the first 15 other medical services around Australia. And the one at Western Sydney, at Mount Druitt, was one that was, you know, because it was so close to Redfern, I think it's only about 15 kilometres. And we were able to send some of our staff and some of our doctors out to help establish them. I mean, most of those first medical services, including the Victorian Aboriginal Health Service down there, just started out really in a shopfront type clinic. So we were able to help you financially, as well as sending doctors here, recruit other doctors in other areas to come and lend a hand.
Now, I think about the closure of that AMS, and then you hear the government's always talking about closing the gap and trying to address Aboriginal health. Do you think that they take into consideration Aboriginal people that are living in the cities, such as Sydney, which has the highest population? Are these people reflected in the statistics that we hear?
No. Some of the blame goes to researchers as well, because a lot of research done into Aboriginal health is really only being done out into the so-called remote communities. All these statistics that we see that are on Aboriginal health is really in cities and large towns throughout Australia. I mean, it's worse. It really, really is worse. And places like Sydney and Melbourne, Brisbane, other capital cities, we get an influx of a lot of Aboriginal people that come through and, you know, may spend a couple of months here and then move on somewhere else. But there's a whole lot of different Aboriginal health issues that our doctors and our staff at the clinics need to be on top of. I mean, nobody, you know, there's hardly any clinics in Sydney, for instance, that feel a need to deal with tropical health or tropical medicine. We have a lot of people coming down from the tropics that come down to Sydney to visit relatives, or there may be a conference here, or there may be a sporting thing on that people will come and then they'll stay for a couple of weeks after. It's a holistic practice, not just the thing of coming in to you see a doctor, get your temperature taken, your blood taken, and see you later. I mean, we have a look at the whole person, the total person, not just the little injury or the little ache or pain that they come in there to initially to get checked up on. Doctors and the other nursing staff will ask, oh, while you're here, let's take your temperature. While you're here, let's have a look at such and such. And so we take care of the total person. We have a five-chair dental service. We used to have a mobile service that went all around New South Wales. I think in Victoria they may still do it. But we had two dental vans that used to go right around until we raised enough money to include a dental clinic within our medical facility.
Do you think that the future of the Redfern Aboriginal Medical Service is secure? Does the government see it as an important organisation and you receive the proper funding? And
well, we don't really care that much about, you know, how the government sees it or what the government sees. What we care about is how the community sees us. We at Redfern see over 1,000 patients a week, and while ever those patients continue to come there, we'll continue to keep the doors open. And the good thing about, you know, the organisations that sprung up in the 70s, such as the Aboriginal Medical Service and Legal Service, we existed on nothing. We didn't get funded, as I said earlier, for about 15 to 18 months. So we know what it's like. We know how to call on volunteers and do fundraising. So in the event that the government shuts us down, or not shuts us down, but stops funding us, we will continue to keep our doors open. I suppose one of the things I said earlier, that we have over 200 Aboriginal medical services throughout Australia, but I mean, we need more. And communities, you know, wherever you are, you should start getting in touch with the Aboriginal medical services and health services that are close to you. And really, you shouldn't have to drive 20 or 30 kilometres to visit a medical service. Establish one of your own. Local communities, even if it's just a referral centre to start with, get in there and let's have a number of Aboriginal medical services right throughout Australia.